Steve Turney, the owner and executive director of the Mental Health Marketing Conference.
What inspired you to create the conference?
So I didn't actually start it myself. It was a friend of mine who had a a relationship that his girlfriend had bipolar disorder, and he didn't know much about it. Did eventually get her some help and supported her along the way, and then his next girlfriend had a psychotic break, schizophrenia, essentially. And so it just kind of, this was 10 years ago, it kind of opened his eyes to his ignorance, you know, and a lot of us needed to learn a lot more about mental health and mental illness, and we still are doing that. I got involved 5 years ago. I was having coffee with him, actually, and he was talking about this conference he was running, and I just said, how can I help, you know? And he said, hey, if you could book the speakers and some of the sponsors, you know, that would be a big help, and he could do the rest, which is still quite a heavy lift. So that was December 2018. We synced up, and 2019, we did a nice little conference in Nashville. 2020, we had to pivot fully virtual because of COVID, and a few sponsors really supported us along the way incredibly. We just gave away tickets that year, trying to figure out what to do. And 21, we did a hybrid, or no, I'm sorry, we postponed 21 altogether. And then 22, 23, 24 have just been great years, with 24 coming up already, a ton of buzz in October in Franklin, Tennessee, just south of Nashville.
Yeah, what do you have planned for 24?
Oh my goodness. We have about 100 speakers, just over 100 speakers, 60 sessions, and we know our audience pretty well. It's a blend of mental health marketers and advertisers, and some of those come from marketing agencies, and some of those come from in-house marketing teams from behavioral health companies, especially the mid-size and larger ones. And then we have a lot of clinicians who have to do their own marketing, solopreneurs and small practices, things like that, that may not have a full marketing team. So we attract a lot of clinicians, and then a lot of executives who are thinking about marketing and growth from, how do I grow my organization? How do I build my business? That perspective. So we've got Johnny Crowder kicking things off. He's the CEO of Cope Notes. He's in a band called Prison. He's an amazing guy, suicide survivor, and just an amazing story about somebody who has authentically integrated his brand, his personal self, with his brand, whether that's his personal brand or his company brand. He's just embedded and integrated into what he does, and he can live, I feel like, from my perspective, he can live fully as himself, regardless of what he's doing, you know, what venture or initiative he's building out, whether it's a company or his own speaking engagements, things like that. So he was on my podcast earlier this year, and we just really hit it off. So he's going to kick things off on Tuesday morning, October 1st. And then we've got panels on AI. We've got panels on psychedelics. We've got panels on PR, you know, earned media, digital marketing, all under the lens of, how do we communicate? How do we talk about this? How do we learn what we need to know in order to reach people who need or want the care?
What is it like for you to be building these relationships with the people at these conferences?
Oh man, it's one of my favorite things, is to just connect people with each other and build relationships along the way. Just about, feels like every day, certainly every week, I'm having conversations like this where, you know, somewhere midway through the conversation, I just realized, man, what an affinity we have, and what an opportunity to connect with each other across, of course, business objectives, but just as humans too, you know. That's a big focus of how I try to build the conferences, because I've been to hundreds or thousands of conferences, stood at booths for many, many hours. And, it wasn't like always a fulfilling experience for me. So, and then as a learner, if you come to the conference, sometimes you walk away feeling like, oh man, my brain is full. You know, it's like, I don't even know how to process. So our theme this year is head in the clouds, feet on the ground, which means, yes, let's get together and think big and dream big, but then let's have some time dedicated to intentional takeaways and distilling everything that's in your head out into some actual practical tactics and strategies that you can take and use in your business, so you don't have to go home and try to process your notes later. So, it's incredible to connect with these speakers and attendees, and then the sponsors that support our conference along the way. There's a lot of tech companies and marketing firms and behavioral health companies that support us. So I'm just really fortunate and lucky to have all these relationships around me. And then part of our passion is connecting them with each other. You know, that's part of the magic, getting in person, although we do have a virtual option as well, really getting in person and connecting people. There's something a little bit extra magic about that, although we've gotten really good about doing it over video too, you know.
And speaking of video, you were talking about in 2020 with COVID, you were all virtual. How was the messaging different during that time where everything was kind of messed up?
Yeah, there was a lot of change, and change presents opportunity, of course, but change is also hard oftentimes for us. So the messaging that year was, for the conference itself, and I think for the behavioral health companies that attended, was survive, you know, and pivot and innovate. So it was a real big conversation in 2020 around what are we doing to adapt to these circumstances that we find ourselves in. And you know, in life, it becomes an exercise of what is not in my control and what is in my control, and understanding the difference, you know, between some of those things. So there's some tidal waves happen, whether it's technology, like AI is a perfect example. Last year we set up an AI debate. So we had two or three people on the pro side, quote unquote, and two or three people on the anti side. Some of them were just good sports. They were all well versed in AI, but that's kind of where we were last year. So we try to meet people where we are. And it was the same in 2020, which is like, here we are in this mystery, in this unknown. How do we move forward from where we're at? So it's kind of understanding where we are and where we need to go, and then the bridge between. So we talked a lot about digital marketing and pivoting and telehealth and things like that, and how to innovate the business. You know, this year we're seeing sort of private equity return to the mean, I think. You know, we had a swell of it for 3, 4, 5 years ago. And, you know, maybe in response to COVID, or partially, maybe not in totality. But I think that's kind of found its level now. And I think we're talking a lot about the clinical voice. So we are providing 10 continuing education units this year for MFTs and social workers and counselors specifically. Because we just want to provide value to them. So even though those aren't marketing courses, they can get those starting August 1 virtually, all the way through December 31st. So they don't have to miss the conference content. But yeah, we feature a lot of clinicians, and then a lot of marketers and marketing agencies. And they have such interesting insights. You know, they've been grinding away on this all year, or for decades, perhaps, you know, with their discipline and their expertise. So we put them on stage, and we don't control too much about what they have to say. You know, we try to find blue ocean for everybody. You know, we won't have 10 branding panels. You know, we'll probably have a couple, 2, 3 branding panels. So we try to find enough variety of content, but just once you put an expert up on stage, if they have a perspective, it just comes out. And so we encourage them to just have fun, you know, and meet people and connect with people on stage and just be a real human, more than we try to direct a lot of the messaging, because it just, you know, you put people, great people, you know, it's like, you know, you put great people on a team and, you know, good things happen. So it's kind of that format or strategy for us.
And I live with a bipolar disorder too. So the stories that really connect me is the relatable stories and people going through similar experiences. How important is empathy in marketing?
Yeah, totally. You know, that's a great question. And I think it's, we can't have enough of it. We can't have enough empathy or understanding, you know? So putting ourselves in a place of humility and openness to learning, and experiencing as best we can other people's experiences from our own lens, is definitely part of what we're doing. And it makes me think of one speaker specifically we have. There's a bunch of them that would relate to what you're talking about. But there's one, Linnea Johnson, who's going to be, she has a book called Perfect Chaos, and talking about, her topic is sort of inspiration porn. It's like we don't need to over leverage people's stories and turn them into something they're not, or at least have our marketing project something that they're not. And so that's going to be a great jumping point off a jumping off point on day one for a conversation around how are we making sure we're not just respecting people's privacy, which is sort of table stakes, right? I mean, they have to opt in fully to be able to share their story their way. But then how can we be empathetic and understanding along the way to treat people like people and not human resources, which even outside the mental health space, the word human resources always makes me cringe a little bit. It's like, oh gosh, like, oh, you got your widgets and your humans and we'll just put them together and make money. It's making sure that we're treating people like people and meeting them where they are. So yeah, it's a great question and something we always think about in addition to, in marketing speak, it's sort of segmentation, right? Like your best marketing sort of puts a mirror in front of somebody where they can see themselves, where they are, and how your solution would help them maybe move forward or change a little bit, improve, save time, save money, make money, whatever it is, personal development. And so, and the mental health side of things, I think of segmentation as underserved communities specifically, and how can we reach people where they are, whether or not they're, able to do private pay insurance and it's talk therapy once a week, or, maybe people need more awareness about sort of the struggles they're going through. That's a big part of anything is simply being aware of who we are and what we're walking through. So, that could be any number of underserved communities, but that's something we try to do. One year we did a focus on youth and child mental health and illness. So we had the global head of mental health from YouTube come out, and we had a director, Eric Ewers is his name. It's a Ken Burns documentary that came out 2 years ago called Hiding in Plain Sight, Youth and Youth Mental Health and Illness. I'm messing up the title a little bit, but it's Hiding in Plain Sight. And they talked with a few other, CEOs and directors of education. So we always try to focus on, as best we can, matching our content and matching our speaker set to what we see as, we're focused mostly on the United States, although people do attend internationally. What our country is kind of going through and needing at this moment in time. And then helping, behavioral health companies specifically use marketing as a megaphone to just make sure their voices is out in their community or out in their state, whatever their market size is. It varies very much depending on the type of company, of course, but just helping them reach more people who need it, really. That's the big mission.
What do you do to help your own mental health?
Well, talk therapy was a big change for me. So when I turned 40, I went to a monastery actually for my birthday. It was like a birthday present to myself of silence. But I was also kind of going through some career wandering, and I came away with this real clear message of like help people in need. And so I started to do that in clumsy ways, like fill up people's cars with gas was my first strategy. So anytime I saw a car broken down, my previous reaction, which is related to a bigger story at the monastery, is was fear. Like, oh, I don't know what's going on with that broken down car. I don't know who they are or the situation. I'll pass by. So instead, I changed that one little thing. So being able to look fear in the eye is big, I think. And then I did that, and I had, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 amazing experiences every time. It was like, oh man, thank you so much. I'm late for my daughter's ballet. And I'm like, oh my goodness, like, how dumb was I before? How just little information I had before. And so then I realized, like, I know who I can really help. it's me. I need the most help of anybody I know. So, under the guise of career guidance, I walked myself into an LPC in the Nashville market, and I thought we were going to be talking about jobs, and we got into the real hard yards of shame and lies and family and all those things. So, that was, I'd had some interaction with psychotherapy before and talk therapy, but that was a real big change for me. So that's a discipline that I continue, trying to focus on a word called what I call agency in my life. And it's probably something you can relate to also. But the idea of as much as possible, and this came out of my talk therapy experience too, being able to say, what if this is all my fault, or what if this is all my creation? What if most of these things are something that I can impact with more information or behavior or discipline or support or whatever it is, medication, all those things that can sometimes help us out. And we can't control everything. It goes back to that point. There are some things outside of our control, and we just need to do the best we can with those outcomes. But there is a lot we can control. And so getting myself where it was appropriate out of a victim mindset and into an ownership mindset, really, I think was the impetus for this conference experience and eventual ownership falling into my lap. I mean, it was like and I say this all the time, but it was like I was on this competitive path of force, like kind of forcing myself down this competitive path, this sales job route and all this stuff, and going back to the fork in the road and then walking down what I call the creative path, which is creating things of value for people in need. And it took me owning my stuff in order to become an owner, I think, is like the real root of that.
You also have a podcast. What is it like talking to different people with different experiences?
Oh man, that was a learning process. And actually, there's a great one that just came out. A guy named Michael Fulweiler, he's going to be talking at the conference about email marketing that doesn't suck is his title, which is important.
That's
We
good.
get enough email, at least make it good, please. So he's at Herd, which is helping like therapists with accounting and financial things. And they just dropped a podcast about the like kind of the business, helping therapists with the business side of what they do, and it's taken off. And he was an early guest on my podcast, which is called The Boost: Conversations with People Promoting Mental Health is what it's called. And I was nervous at the beginning, and I mentioned Michael because the other day on LinkedIn he said what he didn't expect about being a podcast guest is how sweaty you get. It's like,
It's
it really is
true.
this like performance, and it's like we're staring into this black unseeing eye, and then also this person on screen we're trying to have a good conversation with, and then also imagining all the people out there in the world who might be judging what we have to say later at any point in forever, because it's recorded online. And so at first, it was hard, and I had pre-scripted questions that I would rely on, and I think I came off a little scripted. But like you're like super polished. And along the way, after we're like 40 episodes in, and somewhere around episode 10 or 15, I dropped the script and just got comfortable enough to say, okay, what you really need to do is just be present in real time. Of course, do your homework. This is me talking to myself. Everybody has different formats, but do your homework in advance, be in a great headspace, and be ready to have a conversation. And I think that just fits my MO. Not everybody is that way, but I'm probably a little casual. I just want to focus on the human. So we do have a couple scripted questions at the outset. We do the virtual hug, which is tell us something you're thankful for, and then the shameless plug, given the nature of the podcast, tell us what you do. So instead of me reading the bio, and boring the audience initially, it's like, hey, let's just jump in, and why don't you tell me what you do best, because you know best.
So with the conference, you do a lot of work on it. When do you start working on the next one?
So we will take October off. We'll do some surveys. It's October 1st through the 3rd, so we'll take October, the rest of October off. We'll get some feedback from people who attended and spoke and process all of that. And then we get going in November because we will this year actually announce 2025 dates at the conference in 2024, which we've never done before, but we've wanted to. And then December is early bird special. So, you can buy tickets actually at the conference for next year, but those will the price will go up December 31st. So there's no rest for the weary. We it's like planning a giant wedding, there's a lot of risk involved. What if it rains? What if? So you're always asking yourself. And so over the years, I've been doing this. This will be my fifth year, 2019. Yeah. So the earlier you can plan, I mean, the earlier you can get out in front of all of these details and the logistics, then it allows for what I call bluebirds, which is, toward the conference while you're planning, maybe a month out. Something will fly in the window. And if you don't have the space to process it, it'll just smack into the window pane. But if your window is open and you have space and flow to be able to catch something like that, or at least appreciate it and explore it, it makes the conference extra special. So this year we are doing, and it just came to us like a couple months ago. We're doing a hot air balloon ride. So it's like at a, I've never seen this at a conference before, but it's like a 100-foot tether. You can go up in the sky in a basket in a hot air balloon, which is high enough for me. I don't know. Maybe people want higher, but 100 feet is great. So you get a hot air balloon selfie and a video, and you'll be able to look out over the factory, which is the venue that we have it at, which is this really cool old manufacturing facility that's been renovated recently with like $50 million into new restaurants and all sorts of boutiques and a new stage and everything like that. So it's really cool space. It's not your typical hotel ballroom, and nothing wrong with that. It's just a very different vibe. So we try to do things like that, what we say is we try to feed the mind and fill the heart and fuel connectivity. Lots of conferences try to fill your head, and it's good. That's one reason you go there. But really, filling your heart, and we have a lot of personal development courses and then opportunities to connect with humans and then fuel connectivity. Let's get to know each other. And so we kind of strip away titles. We get really flat with the hierarchy of the conference, like it's kind of like a family reunion. Like, not everybody is going to be interested in this and shouldn't be. Some mechanical engineer might get something out of it, but probably not. But once you're in the room, then you're family. You're here and you are connected to this just as much as anybody else. So that goes for sponsors too. Sponsors are not way down the hall in another ballroom. They're right there and they're invited to everything and join the taco night and speak if you have something interesting to say. Those are kind of two conversations we have. You can be a sponsor and not be a speaker. You can be a speaker and not be a sponsor, and you can be both. But what we look for is expertise and perspective that's going to bring value to the attendees. That's how we make our decisions there. So I've learned a lot over the last few years, and I think after this year, what we'll do in November is we're writing a playbook. It's kind of like It's kind of an event planning playbook that we'll share out with some of the insights that we have.
How can people reach out and learn more?
Ooh, thank you for asking. So we're big on LinkedIn. You can just search for Mental Health Marketing Conference and you'll definitely find us. You'll find me there. And or you can go to our website, which is MH as in mental health, mhmarketing.org. So that's our website, pretty simple URL. And we just announced the agenda this week, while you and I are talking earlier a couple days ago. So it's a little bit of it's just one of those things that people need to see a conference ship about 90 days out, is they want to see who's speaking as a way to validate their attendance. So we've never been earlier with that, which is real. It really feels good. But you can see you can get a vibe for kind of what we do. And there's some videos on the site and everything like that.